Another way around it is that at the day of Minnesota, the 12th hour, apostolic Sabbatarian congregation mounted out of the 12th hour. In New York and Texas, the day is May 5th, 23, or it is 5th, 16, 2027. We're going to start our first service on this day with a song, and then there's a Pearly White City. There's a holy and beautiful city who's built for a ruler is Lord. And saw it descending from heaven when that person exhaled he trod. It's a massive wall of jasper. The city itself is pure gold, and when my prayer can't hear is folded, when I shall its glory behold. In that bright city, pearly white city, I have a mansion, a heart, and a crown. Now I am watching, waiting and longing for the white city, and so coming down. No sin is allowed in that city, and nothing defiling or mean. No pain and no sickness can enter, no crape on the doorknob is seen. Her sorrows and cares are forgotten, no tempter is there to ignore. No parting words ever are spoken, there's nothing to hurt and destroy. In that bright city, pearly white city, I have a mansion, a heart, and a crown. Now I am watching, waiting, and longing for the white city council coming down. No heartaches are known in that city, no tears ever moisten the heart. No disappointment in heaven, no envy or strife in the sky. The saints all sanctified holy, they live in sweet harmony there. My heart is not set on that city, and someday its blessings I'll share. In that bright city, pearly white city, I have a mansion, a heart, and a crown. Now I'm watching, waiting and longing for the white city council coming down. My loved ones are gathering yonder, my friends too are passing away, and soon I'll join the bright number and there in eternity's day. There's safe now in glory with Yahshua, Their trials and battles are past. They overcome sin and the tempter. Every sad face at last. In that bright city, very white city, I have a mansion, a heart, and a crown. Now I am watching, waiting, and longing for the white city. That's all coming down. There may be a pitfall upon the right hand and upon the left. We may have to endure toil in our journey. When longing for the rest, we may have no toil on. When faint, we may have to fight. When discouraged, we must still hope, but with Yeshua as our guide, we shall not fail of the reaching the desired haven at last. According unto the reading, we ought to pray for wisdom and for determination to walk in the ways of the Yeshua. Only His ways are pleasantness and peace. When we must deny ourselves of something, or when we must endure a trial to gain a victory over the temptation, we are to feel that these are the steps toward the final victory, and should see that to live the life of sin is, as it were, to live down in the gully, down where we naturally find ourselves from the birth up. To get to live on the mountaintop, the kingdom, one must, as it were, climb the steep and rough mountain road. To climb the road may seem hard, but after the last step is made and the peaks of the mountain reached, there is joy and comfort, confidence and victory, which no language can describe. That's the end of our prayer thought. Now we're going to a regular sermon. The children of the barren, more than the children of the barren woman. One time greetings, number 39, Dr. V.T. Hollis. We're going to go right on into the sermon. It says, May the 3rd, 1947 is when the sermon was preached. It says, before we begin our study, verse by verse, of Isaiah 54, we shall read verse 1 of Isaiah 54. Sing, O barren, thou that didst not bear. Let's do that again now. Isaiah 54:1. Sing, O barren, thou that didst not bear, break forth into a singing, and cry aloud, thou that didst not travail to the child. For more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Yahweh. Two women are here brought to you. One is barren, and the other is not. The barren woman is encouraged to break forth into singing, for she is promised to have many more children than the one who is having children. To learn who these women are, let us turn to the fourth chapter of the Galatians, where it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. That he who was of the bond woman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by the promise. Which things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants, the one from the Mount Sinai, which generates unto bondage, which is Agar, Galatians 4:22-24. For the Apostle Paul reminds us that the Abraham had two wives and two sons. We all know the story that when Yahweh called Abraham to depart from the country and to go to an unknown land, Yahweh promised to give him a son, something like 25 years. Passed by, and still the arrival of a son was not in the sight. Sarah was then about 90 years old, Genesis 17:17. During those years of the Abraham and Sarah's waiting for a son, Hagar became Abraham's wife, and through her, Ishmael was born. Sarah, therefore, is the desolate woman put aside, and Hagar is the one who has an husband. According to Isaiah 54:1 is allegorically speaking of these two women and their children. As to what the allegory is about, the apostle explains. For this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, an answer to Jerusalem that now is and is in the bondage with her children. But Jerusalem that is above is free, that is the mother of us all. Galatians 4:25-26. Hagar symbolizes Jerusalem, the city of the Jews, the born after the flesh, whereas Sarah symbolizes Jerusalem that is to come, the city of the born again, the children of the promise. For it is written, "Rejoice thou barren that bearest not, break forth and cry, thou that travailest not. For the desolate hath many more children than she that hath an husband." Now we brethren, as the Isaac was, are the children of the promise. But as then, he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the scripture? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, of the fruit, Galatians 4, 27 to 31. And her son, Ishmael, represents the church in the Old Testament period. And that Sarah and her son, Isaac, represents the church in the New Testament period. For the membership of the Old Testament church was indeed of the flesh, for it was made up of whosoever was born from the stock of Jacob. But the members of the New Testament church, especially the ones here projected, are persons who have by the Spirit of the truth been converted unto the Yeshua. But as it was impossible for Isaac to have been born by the will of the flesh, just so impossible it is for these children of the Spirit of the truth to be born by the will of men. So it says, yeah, for Yahweh's reason for the delay and the fulfilling of his promise, and the Sarah, therefore, is very obvious. He was witnessing both history and prophecy of the life of Abraham's family. He calls Ishmael's birth by the delaying of the birth of the Isaac. For the Ishmael, therefore, as a type of the Hebrews, the children after flesh, preceded Isaac, the type of the children of the promise. Okay. For our greatest interest, however, is for the knowing at the time in which the Isaiah 54 finds its entire fulfillment, and the generation under which its allegorical prophecy especially applies, to know whether it was written especially for the benefit of the early apostolic congregation, for the congregation in the Middle Ages, or for the church in our time, since none of the New Testament writers comment, except on the first verse of Isaiah 54. Obviously, the chapter was not written especially for the people at that time. Moreover, verse 14 further proves the time under which the prophecy applies. In the righteousness shalt thou be established, thou shalt be far from the oppression, for thou shalt not fear, and from the terror, for it shall not come near thee. Isaiah 54:14. For the promise unto this latter section of the apostolic congregation is that she shall be far from oppression, be not ruled by another people. Okay. Like we were down in front of Texas at Gilead Center, the third feeding pastor for the Seventh-day Adventist Church movement and the fourth movement, the children of Isaac were ruled by another people, and that was the people of Esau's. Be not ruled by another people. That terror will not come near her, and that she will have no need to fear. In the view of the fact that the church hitherto has never been free from any of these, logic rules that she is yet to realize these promises. Hence, the generation to which this chapter is addressed, the church that is to receive these promises, is not in the past, but in the future. And the fact that the inspiration now, for the first time, unseals these long-concealed promises and now brings them unto the attention, makes them meet in a due season. For the truth is obvious. The church, after this announcement has done its work, is soon to merge into this glorious period of the time. Furthermore, verse 15 says, "Behold, they shall surely gather together, but not by me. Now whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fall for thy sake." Isaiah 54:15. Here she is warned that her enemies will gather together against her, but not by the Yahweh. For they will therefore not prosper, but will fall for her sake. Her enemies will never again be able to carry any of her members into the captivity, not into the prison, or into the flames of the fire, nor into the dens of the beast. She is never again to see the Assyrian or the Chaldeans prosper against her. Neither is she any more to suffer the persecution by the Jews and by the Romans. All of these are now in the past, and their reoccurrence will have no effect on her. Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth the coals in the fire, and that bringeth forth an instrument for his work. And I have created the waster to destroy. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in the judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Yahweh, and their righteousness is of me, said the Yahweh. Isaiah 54:16-17. So far, the weapons that were formed against the church have prospered. But the church here in the prophecy is to be protected and being completely in the Yahweh's hands. Everyone that rises against her in the judgment, she will condemn by the truth and righteousness. Our existence and success in the work of the Yahweh, therefore, is no longer a mystery. Prophecy plainly points out that many are rising against us, but none have and none will ever prosper. For the Yahweh, who created the smith and the waster to destroy, is just as well able to create peace and security. The spirit of the prophecy reiterates thus, as the saints left the cities and villages, they were pursued by the wicked who sought to slay them. But the swords that were raised to kill Yahweh's people broke and fell as powerless as a straw. Angels of Yahweh shielded the saints. as they cried day and night for the deliverance. The cry came up unto therefore unto the Yahweh, before the Yahweh, came up before the Yahweh. Early Writers 285. But if his people remain separate and distinct from the world as a nation that do righteousness, Yahweh will be their defense, and no weapon formed against them shall prosper. Testimony, Volume 5, page 601. Well, the lesson is clear. The church is emerging from one period, and that's having the enemy to rule over them, and to a period that the enemy will not rule over them. And the Adventists have become an enemy to their own people, their own members, by accepting that doctrine, that false Catholic doctrine of the three in one person of the Godhead, the Trinity doctrine, that is nothing but the sign of the mark of the beast. And the Adventists today are enforcing that upon their members, so therefore their members are in captivity to the Catholic Church right now. Okay, it says, for the lesson is clear. The church is emerging from one period and merging into another. She is at the dawn of a new day. Her glory is now to be, her great work to be manifested. Her great work finished, and all her children, a great multitude saved. Rather than her enemies triumphing over her, she is a triumph over them. Since the church as a whole is here represented by both mother and children, we should know what part of the church is represented by the mother and what part by the children. According unto the verse 17, the chapter concludes that the servants of the Yahweh, those who bring forth converts, constitute the mother, and their convert, the laity, constitutes the children. What is meant by her travailing in the birth? For the answer, let us turn to the Galatians 4:19. My little children, of whom I travail in the birth again until the Yahshua be formed in you, those for whom the Apostle Paul was laboring to bring the Yahweh to their knowledge, Yahshua unto their knowledge, the Son. He says he was travailing in birth for them until the Yahshua be formed in them, that's the Son, until they be fully converted unto him, be born again. Now that we understand the allegory of these two women and of their children, also the time for which Isaiah 54 was written, we shall study the chapter briefly, verse by verse, and all its details as far as the Yahweh permits. Isaiah 54, 2 and 3. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thy habitation. Spread out, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. For thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. All these terms, enlarge, stretch, spread out, lengthen, and strengthen, means to do everything possible for the amplifying, for us to amply meet the situation for the making the accommodations for a larger number of converts, to do everything possible now so that when you break on the right and on the left, when the multitude of the converts begin to pour in, you be not confused and unable to accommodate. Do not disappoint the people. And moreover, assure these Yahweh, thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. For the prophecy, therefore, brings us to the days of the restitution of all things. Matthew 17:11. Isaiah 54:4. Fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame, for thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood anymore. Yes, she is reassured that she need no longer fear, need not be thrown into the disorder and confusion anymore, that she shall forget her reproach and widowhood. Yahweh departing from her. Isaiah 54:5. For thou maker is thine husband. The Yeshua of the host, the Son, is so thy maker, which is Yahweh the Father, is our husband. Yeshua is the Son of Yeshua of the host, your Son. In his name, and thy Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel, the Yahweh of the whole earth shall he be called. Talking about Yahshua being called the Yahweh of the whole earth, or the God of the whole earth, it says here. Our enemies may say anything they wish, but Yahshua himself testifies that he is our Redeemer, our Savior, our King. This is the Son. The Yeshua that made us, well, the Yahweh the Father is, with his Son Yeshua, they worked together to create mankind. They're in the Garden of Eden. That's in Genesis 1, 26, I believe. The Redeemer, the King of the whole earth. Isaiah 54:7. And for the Yahshua has called thee as a woman. This is Yahshua talking to Son now. Forsaken. Well, maybe not. Let's go back to the Father again. For the Yahweh, the Father, has called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in the spirit, and a wife of the youth. When thou wast refused, saith thy Yahweh, for a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with the great mercies will I gather thee. For the statement, for a small moment have I forsaken thee, being set forth in the contrast to the statement that with the great mercies will I gather thee, shows that the Yahweh forsaking her is her dispersion among the Gentiles, and that her gathering is her returning unto the homeland, her inhabiting the desolate cities. So apparently the Gentiles are driven out of the homeland, according to Zechariah 14, and the cities are desolate now in Judea and Israel. Isaiah 54, 8 and 9. In a little wrath I hid my face from thee. For a moment that with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Yahshua thy Redeemer. And Yahshua is indeed our Redeemer according to Revelation 5:9. Redeemed all mankind by his blood. For this is as the waters of the Noah unto me. For as I have sworn that the waters of the Noah should no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee, nor rebuke thee. That which she had gone through, she will go through no more. As sure a promise as a promise to Noah, I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of the covenant between me and the earth. Genesis 9:13. Isaiah 54:10-11. For the mountains shall depart and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, saith the Yahweh that hath mercy on thee. O thee afflicted, tossed with the tempest, and not comforted, behold, I will lay thy stones with the fair colors, and lay thy foundations with the sapphire. What else could her stone stand for if not for the members, the children, and what could her foundations depict if not her apostles, the founders, those whom the Yahweh uses for the work of such a revival and reformation. So this shows a new movement. Anytime you have a revival and reformation, you have to have a new movement to proceed it. Such was the privilege of the 12 apostles at this beginning of the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene. Recognizing this glorious fact, inspiration wrote, and the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and in them the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. Revelation 21:14. For the statement, I will lay that foundation with the sapphires, you notice that she is now being founded, that the Yahshua is now building from the bottom up. This is the Son. He's doing this building. Isaiah 54:12. And I will make thy windows of the edges and thy gates of the carbuncle, and all thy borders of the pleasant stone. If the literal use of the windows is to give light and air, then what could this symbolism denote if not her seers, those who bring light and truth unto the congregation of the Yahweh? And if the literal gates are used to keep out the undesirable elements, then in the spiritual realm, they must symbolize her watchmen, the minister. What a wonderful illustration. What a sanctified group of people. It vividly projects stones of the fair colors and foundations of the sapphires, windows of the agates, gates of the carbuncles, and all her borders of the present stone. Every soul a jewel. I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of the Ophir, Isaiah 13:12. For Zion's sake, says Yahweh, will I not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name that the mouth of the Yahweh shall know. There shall also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahweh, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy Yahweh. Thou shalt no more be termed forsaken, neither shalt thy land any more be termed desolate, but thou shalt be called Hephzibah, and thy land Judah. For the Yahweh delighteth in thee, and thy land shall be married. Isaiah 62:1-4. Now it is plainly seen that the latest sin of it shall forever pass away, that Yahweh will have a church without a spot, wrinkle, or any such thing. You cannot afford to be left out of it. You must join the advocates of the truth of if you are to become a part of this glorious movement. Isaiah 54:13-17. And all thy children shall be taught of the Yahweh, and great shall be the peace of thy children. And the righteousness shalt thou be established, thou shalt be far from oppression, for thou shalt not fear, and from the terror, for it shall not come near thee. Behold, they shall surely gather together, but not by me. Whosoever shall gather together against thee shall fall for thy sake. Behold, I have created the smith that bloweth their coals in the fire, and that bringeth forth an instrument for his work, and I have created the waster to destroy. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Yahweh, and their righteousness is of me, says the Yahweh. Evidently, we are slow to be convinced that the mighty Yahweh of the Jacob is able to protect and to keep us from all evil, else he would not be trying and again to convince us of his ability, by the further explaining that as he has created the smith and the waster and has put them into work, just so he is able to make their instruments and efforts of none effect. For Yahweh's persuasion, you see, it says that a little child shall understand. All these promises are the heritage of the servants of Yahweh. How can we afford to let them go? Are they not cheap enough, since faith is all they cost? Let us therefore believe, and they shall be ours forevermore. We have now learned that Abraham's two wives and two sons are an allegorical forecast of the Old and New Testament churches, that Ishmael's arrival prefigured the fleshly Israel, and that Isaac's arrival prefigured the spiritual Israel. The Christians that Ishmael persecuted, Isaac was a forecast of the Jews persecuting the Christians, that Ishmael's act of disinheriting and sending Hagar and her son away from home foreshadowed Yahweh's act of the putting away and disinheriting fleshly Israel, that only those who are born again, born of the Spirit, will inherit the kingdom, that Isaac, who came into this world only by the power of Yahweh, foreshadowed the Christ, the antitypical apostolic church, but especially the soon coming kingdom, a church in which there is to be no Ishmaelite, no person brought in by the will of the flesh, no terrors, no bad fish, no ghosts, only saints, only such as should be saved. And no one can be such as should be saved if he does not believe what the word says, if he does not take his stand on the truth side. Only they that hunger for the truth and righteousness will be filled and become his precious jewel, fit to be a part of this Yahweh's jewel building. And they shall be mine, saith the Yahshua of the host. This is Yahshua the Son. In that day when I make up my jewel, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him, then shall ye return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth Yahweh and him that serveth him not. Malachi 3:17-18. It is a terrible thing to disbelieve the word of Yahweh, or to be indifferent, indecisive, and inactive. The stranger of Galilee.
Ensanciaste Tabasho one day of the beautiful murmuring sea. I saw the great crowds as they thronged the way of the stranger of Galilee. I saw how the man who was blind from birth in a moment was made to see. The lame was made whole by the matchless skill of the stranger of Galilee. His luck of compassion, his words of love, they shall never have forgotten thee. And since sick and helpless he saw me there, the stranger of Galilee, he showed me his hand and his risen side, and he whispered it was for thee. Not the minister of the pierced sea, of the stranger of Galilee. And I felt I could love him forever, so gracious and tender was he. I claimed him that day as my Savior, the stranger of Galilee. I heard him speak peace to the angry waves of the turbulent raging sea. And though at his word or the water still, this stranger of Galilee, a peaceful, a quiet, and holy calm, now and ever abides with me. He holdeth my life in his mighty hand, the stranger of Galilee. Come ye who are driven and tempest-tossed, and his gracious salvation see. He'll fight life's storms with his peace and his shield, this stranger of Galilee. He bids me to go and the story tell, whatever to you will be. If only you live and with you abide, the stranger of Galilee. Oh, my friend, would you love him forever? So gracious and tender was he. Accept him today as your Savior, this stranger of Galilee.